Hi everyone, it's only your host Shegilola Salami and welcome to the Virtue Cafe, and this is the Shegilola Salami Show. Oh my good lord, I've had the worst day ever, but I am not even going to bore you with it, right? It's just been one of those days. I mean, it was bad enough that last year I kept myself, you know, some unscrupulous people just kept trying to hack my website. And then for some reason, someone decided they were going to go to flag my YouTube channel. I mean, I don't post anything other than podcast episodes. So what is, you know, against YouTube guidelines as on my podcast channel for to go and flag it up? So, yeah, my YouTube channel has been temporarily suspended. So now I will try to go and get it unsuspended. But, yeah, so, and it's been a day. Let me not even go into too much details about that, but yes, who's going to keep me company today? Who have I got here? My little human, she's at nursery today, thank God, because I don't think I've got energy to, you know, answer questions. But who have I got here with me?
Anthony R. Howard is here.
Hi, Anthony. I can't really hear you properly. Is your mic up?
Oh, I'm turning it up now. Okay,
perfect.
Is this better?
Yes. So how are you, Anthony?
I am wonderful. I'm wonderful. It is a beautiful day across the pond. It's that cusp right where fall is ending and winter starting. So where I live in Atlanta, Georgia, it's usually very hot, but now it's cooled down, but the sun is still shining. So it's very nice, very, very cool, and things are good here. Just launched a new book. I'm very excited about that. So a whole lot of big things in technology and in authorship going on over here.
Well, it's good that things are going all right for you. Haven't you had Misery Loves Company? I'm having a horrible day, and you're telling me about sunshine and cool weather?
I had to balance it, right? Because when you have a rough day, you know, you don't want to hear about anybody else's problems, right? You're dealing with your own problems. So I'm going to bring positive energy and sunshine in everyone's direction. That's what I'm going to do today.
True. And nothing makes me feel better than a nice big bowl. Not bowl, well, it's like a bowl of hot chocolate. So that's what I've got right
hot
now.
Hot chocolate? If I had one, you'd have one.
Yeah. So would you like some hot chocolate then? Mine is extra chocolatey, extra milky hot chocolate.
I got you. Coming right up.
Okay, perfect. Oh, you're bringing me another one. Okay, folks, he's taking over my cafe now. That's all right. You know what? In this mood that I'm in, I want someone else to get me the drink. What else would I like with it? I would actually like a tuna bagel. Okay, so, yes, get on up with it, Anthony.
I'm on it. They got it. Order up.
You know
it's
what?
Coming.
I need all the liquid energy that I can get. Because, you know, for people who listen to my show over time, you know that, you know, the last few weeks, you know, it's literally been back-to-back colds and, you know, sore throats and losing my voice and then being sniffly all over again. So I've been to the doctors today, and then they go, well, you know what, let's just do your blood test, you know, just make like I'm feeling a tiny. And she goes, you know, being a mom and doing the whole pregnancy thing, you know what, seriously, people never tell you the downside to going through, you know, pregnancy and how all the different things it does to your body. Anyways, I've had to get blood tests done today. So I've given blood. Well, not given blood, but had blood taken. So, yes, now I need lots of liquid in my system to try and replace that. But I'm not going to bore you with all of that stuff. Yeah. So tell me about
yourself. You're not boring me.
Sorry?
I just had my firstborn daughter. So I know firsthand about things you're talking about with going through, right, the doctor's visits and all that, because I was there with my wife during all that pregnancy stuff. So I, you know, obviously I haven't been through what you're going through, but I've seen firsthand what you're going through, and it's nothing nice. So here to support you and wish you the best, because it is a beautiful thing when it's all said and done.
Virtual hug.
I feel it.
Seriously, right? People just do not understand, right, that being a mom, right? It's not even about the motherhood bit, right? It's just literally your body just does not become, you lose your body. Your body is no longer your own, you know? It's like, you know, you sneeze and you pee. You know, you have to run to the bathroom all the time. And it's like your plumbing doesn't work as it normally does. You know, your body and all these things. But yes, let's not even get into that. Tell me about yourself. And congrats to you and your wife.
Thank you very, very much. Thank you. I am a best-selling, award-winning author. I have a lot of different awards. I've appeared on several national media outlets, and I wrote The Invisible Enemy, Black Fox, and The Invisible Enemy 2, Vendetta. It's a best-selling spy series. Studied Christianity for over 15 years, as well as secret societies, basic theology, and angelology, which spawned the religious thriller I just launched called Devil's Diary, The Coming, which is about what would happen if the Creator returned tomorrow. Presently, I'm in Atlanta, and I work for one of the largest technology firms where I was rated number one IT superhero by InfoWorld and Computer World. That's like the Wall Street Journal over here, the IT world. Winner of the National Federal Office Systems Award. That's the largest information technology exposition serving the government marketplace in America. And then several case studies have been published on my solutions across the technology industry. And currently, I provide advisement for some of America's most distinguished clients, including a sizable amount of work for the U.S. defense sector, Department of Justice, and Department of Homeland Security.
Fabulous. I know that's quite, you know, it's quite amazing. So tell me, how did your journey, because, you know, you're award-winning author, you know, number one rated IT person. So how did your journey start? You know, how did you start off in IT and, you know, technology? Then how did you get into publishing?
So interesting story, because I found that they were both intertwined, even though I didn't know it at the time. So I started in technology very early. So two decades ago, I started to build my own computer systems, and I got very good at it. And at that time, a little bit before the Y2K scenario, internet was kind of emerging, right, 20 years ago. So everyone wanted to get on the internet. Everyone wanted a computer. So it was a really, really good business, and I got good at upgrading, fixing, and I took it to the next level, started my own business, and that's how I paid my way through graduate school. So that's how I first got into technology. And then I said, how could I use technology to bring content to audiences? And that's how I became an author, or a real author, right? I've been writing since I was a kid, but actually putting stuff out that people will actually read or pay to read started that way. So the first book I wrote that hit the bestseller list, The Invisible Enemy, Black Fox, was written based on my time in the Department of Defense. So it's a book based on what's really going on behind the scenes in the Department of Defense, not what the movies show you, but what's actually going on. So based on real projects, real weapon systems, right, real protocols, real spy networks. And I had predicted a lot of things that actually came to pass, which is how the book became famous. So that's kind of how that happened in the 60-second version. And I wrote the book that I always wanted to read but had never written. And that's a short story. And that's what I think brought some authenticity to the genre, where it's generally, you know, the movies just making stuff up and putting it out there. You know, what I call fast food literary, fast food literature, where it's, you know, not much nutrition, not much value, but it tastes good when you're hungry and it's cheap and it's easily consumable. So not that, but something that you can really, that's really going to tickle your fancy, and you concepts where you read the book and you want to know more.
Yeah. Okay. So you're the expert, you know, and I like learning things. So what would you tell me, what do you think, you know, people like me and other authors, you need to know with regard to technology and publishing or books? Well, technology in general, I like to know about the technology side of it. So what 10 things, you know, can you share with us that we need to know?
I'll share with you a secret.
Okay.
And it's not going to be a secret I reveal on your show because it's world famous. But I'll say that not only is technology your friend, but technology can also not be your friend. So you have to be very careful as you build your brand as not only an author, but as a writer. So let me explain what I mean by that. So you as a person, right? My phrase, a catchphrase for clients is Google doesn't forget. So there's metadata all around that stores the information forever. And there are your searching habits, right? So when you go to a website and a habit or profile, a psychological profile that's built on you based on where you go on your phone, based on where you shop, based on what you buy, and all these things create a profile of you without your knowledge of it. And then these things run back and tell other servers, right, who you are, and so they can serve you ads to sell you more stuff. Now, what that also does, right, is it creates a profile of you. So if someone were to Google Anthony R. Howard book, all my books and stuff would come up. If they were to Google technology expert book, some of my books would probably come up. But if I had a psychological profile built on something not so healthy and my name was attached to those not so healthy things, as we see what's going on in the media all across the world, then when people Google that, those unhealthy things, my name would pop up and be associated with that. Even though I didn't do anything, right, but because my profile was mapped and people associated me to that, your brand can be derailed by, you know, what they call Big Brother. Now, on the happy side,
happy side. That sounds really scary, Dirk. Please educate me some more, because I was just literally, my jaw dropped, right? Like, this is just sounds, you know, like it's that movie, and I cannot remember it, right? Where this woman wakes up, was it a woman or a man? Wakes up and he's, or I can't remember who it was, and their identity had been stolen and everything, and suddenly you're telling me that Google can derail your identity or your profile is really mind-boggling. Please give us more bad news.
A person to do it, but yeah. So let me go a little bit further, since there was some interest there. So on the web, what did you Google today, or what did you search today on the web? Or if you didn't search anything today, tell me what you searched yesterday.
Do you really want to know?
I want to know. Okay. What did you search yesterday?
So
even if it's inappropriate, then I really want to know.
I searched, is lupus hereditary?
Okay. So now, because you searched that, and obviously when you search something, they know you're looking for something, and you click on multiple links because you're searching for something or you're gathering information about something. That's why anyone searches anything. You put it in your search engine, and you click the first link, and then maybe the second, third, fourth, fifth, until you find what it is you're looking for. Now, what Google has already done is they have taken that subject, and now they're going to serve you ads based on that subject. Now, why would Google do that? Because they get paid each ad you click on.
Yeah.
So it's in their best interest to know what you're going to do. Now, what are they also doing? Not just today's history or yesterday's history. They're taking what you searched yesterday and what you searched last week and what you searched last month, and they're building a profile on you. And then they're comparing this profile to other buyers. So people who shop for what you shop or search for what you search for, what did they buy? And then those are the ads they're going to search you. So all your search history, right, it's not completely anonymous, right? It's a algorithm not only built to get you the fastest results, but to serve you ads that you're more likely to click on. And they do that by building a profile on you. And then that profile can be mapped, right, to other things that may or may not be associated with you, just what Google thinks that you searched and trying to guess why you searched those things.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, I get that. But I think But then how you know, like we're saying that how if one of your books could then be associated with something junk if you were searching for junk, how does that work?
Okay, so let's take my book, The Invisible Enemy, Black Fox. Now, the book was written about spies that were planted here by foreign powers, which really happens, by the way.
Mm.
And in the book, a Washington Post reporter discovers a secret that'll bring America to its knees. Okay?
Okay.
It's a real secret. I didn't make it up. Now, because, now I'm not going to tell the secret, but it's really juicy. Now, because, right, what actually was written about in the book came to fruition in the exact manner that I had predicted, same protocol, same spy, the way the spies were trained and recruited, and one of them even had a physical resemblance of the real spies that were caught. And then because of the terrorism that the world is now facing, now, right, they can call these spies terrorists. And since my book was predicted a lot of that stuff, so now, even though in my mind the book has nothing to do with terrorism, right, at that point in time, if you Google terrorism,
yeah,
my book would come up.
That's
an unhealthy topic that I would have rather not been affiliated with. But, you know, I can't help with the algorithm. So people who, you know, the search engines decided that people who Googled terrorism, people who searched terrorism, were interested in my writing. So to serve more ads, right, to serve more ads, they sent that book to folks who Googled that stuff. Right, so that's what I was talking about with even though I didn't write a book about that stuff, it was matched to that subject. But that's the deeper, darker side of technology. And the happier side is, hey, using social media,
yeah,
right, and technology available now that weren't available when I first became an author. I mean, it's a really exciting time. I mean, it's a beautiful time, right? There was no Kindle Direct and all this, you know, CreateSpace and all this freedom. I mean, it was a few gatekeepers and then that was it. Or you could pay big bucks and go what's now called self-publishing. That was pretty much your only option. Now, I just started my own publishing company and that's exciting for me because there was a book that got me my first book deal. And this was, it was Devil's Diary, The Coming, which is, again, the book about what would happen if the creator returned tomorrow to Earth. And it was decided that the publishing company didn't want to come out with that book because I didn't have all these degrees and awards behind my name and case studies and all certifications and all that stuff. So I couldn't go on, you know, shows like this or on TV and on the radio and talk to, you know, a lot of the biblical aspects just because I didn't have that platform or the credentials. So they wanted to come out with a spy novel because I was already speaking at technology conferences all the time and things like that. And I was very well known in the industry. So they came out with the spy novels first. And then since that did so well, then the sequel, and then, you know, the Devil's Diary, it never came out. And at the end, they decided it was just too much of a risk, even though it was the book that got me the book deal. So
yeah.
What sense does that make? So in order to put the book out, I had to start my own publishing company, and I would never have been able to do that if technology, right, using social media, using the internet, using, right, mediums to find cover designers, to find editors, right now technology has made the world smaller and you're able to bring, you know, the independent publishing is able to come to life and everyone's able to at least have a chance at putting some quality writing out there. And that's what I think the great side of technology is. And I promise you two tips, I think, and I want to I want to talk about this one because it's very important, and new authors, please pay attention to this because it's very important. When you sign with a publishing company, right, the industry has really changed, and it was once kind of predatory, but now it's very predatory. So let me give you an example. So if I did a book signing with a traditional publishing house at Barnes & Nobles, I would market the event because the publishing company would market it unless I was a super-duper-duper celebrity. And then let's say I did a great job marketing it. 200 people came to the event. Half of them got the book. So my book was priced at, let's say, $20. And 100 people got it. That would be $2,000. So that should be $2,000 of money made that day. And how much do you think I would see under a traditional publishing house?
I guess it's variable. Is it like 25%, 30%, something ridiculous like that?
Under a traditional publishing house, not even on a great day. I will receive zero. And that's what zero because you didn't sell the book, or they didn't buy the book from you. The 100 people bought the book from Barnes & Nobles. Barnes & Nobles bought the book from the Barnes & Nobles wholesaler, who bought the book from the Barnes & Nobles distributor, who bought the book from your publisher, who also paid to get the book printed. So by the time all those people touch the pipeline, right, there's about a nickel left for you per book, and you would get the 5 or 25% of whatever your publisher sold it to the distributor for, not 25% of the total proceeds. So people don't understand that, especially new authors. And it's very important that you understand that fine print, because they use terms that don't mean what they mean outside the literary world, like terms like gross margin, which means profit. But they're talking about the gross margin between what they sold it to their profit and selling it to the distributor. So they may have sold it to the distributor for $9. So even though your book sold for $20, you're only getting that 25% of the $2 profit that they made. So it you know, 50 cents a book, if that, and you will have to wait 180 days for it, and it doesn't come at all. And you paid for your own gas to get there, you bought your own lunch, and you talked to 100, 200 people who came out and sold 100 books. So it didn't. So using technology, you can get around all that now. Using so many other different options, you can actually take your book and, you know, sell it yourself now. If you can, and there's a ways to create quality products using technology. So that was a very important benefit of technology, and that's what I did with Black Fox Imprint. And you know, people say, "Oh, well, you're selling less copies." Well, that's fine, right? Do the math. So if I'm making $10 a book versus 50 cents a book, I don't have to sell as many copies. I don't have to sell anywhere near it. And it's just a better experience because, as a technology expert, I can do a lot of the marketing, a lot of the stuff, and I can hire cover designers and hire editors. And it takes a lot of work. But remember, right, your book is going to be yours forever, right? Don't let somebody else take, you know, have you do all the work and then they usurp everything. So my experiences with traditional publishing house weren't that great, obviously, but now with technology the way it is, you can start. Now, it is a lot of work, but to me it was worth it. So I always encourage new authors to really consider what they want to know and what they want to do with technology and publishing, because there are a lot of different options out there, especially when you have an idea that just traditional publishing houses don't want to touch yet. So a lot of them, they aren't ready. They're busy pushing the fast food literature.
Yeah.
So, you with me?
How many have we said now? Is that 3 or 4?
I'm sorry?
How many? Because if you're going to get 10 tips, so I've lost now. Is that 3 or 4? Have you been counting?
I lost count. I don't want to go over. So I will, if I'm not at 10 yet, I am going to do some more. So I'm going to do some more. Because I, you know, if I said 10, then we got to do 10. And I lost count,
yes.
So I'm gonna put us at 8. So I got 2 more. So the first,
oh,
the second one is.
But I was thinking 3. You're the expert.
I do the work to do. All right. Second thing, technology and public. So I just talked about kind of the rules of are the key differences. A key difference of other methods of publishing versus traditional publishing. And that's the – if you listen to nothing else I say today, if you take away that, it was time well spent listening to that key. Now, let's take that key a little deeper. So how do you bring your idea to market using technology? Now – what a lot of authors don't understand is that it's different than, if you're over 40 anyway, it's different reading now than you know, with the millennials coming out, because we're in the age of now. Before, you know, with the Danielle Steele and Tom Clancy, right, you had 100 pages to build a story. Okay, you don't have 100 pages anymore, right? People are going to download the first chapter on Amazon, because technology allows them to do that, and you better have something interesting to say within those first chapters. So you don't really have. I mean, you're competing against with technology. You're competing against so many other authors. You have to be able to stand out, and this is one of the ways you can do that: having a really strong first couple chapters. Instead of taking that time to lollygag, right? You have to reel your reader in. Because a lot of folks are clicking on that read inside the book, and they're going to read through the first chapter online, they're going to download it. And, you know, people don't understand how important that is, that with technology, folks can open your book virtually for free and read it just like they were in the library, and then put it back on the shelf and read something else. And obviously they're going to pick up or buy what, you know, what was interesting, what drew them in immediately. So if Sally is taking a peaceful stroll through the park in chapter one, That's not enough. But if Sally's being chased by an unknown assailant, right, that might be enough to get them to turn the page. So have something there. All right. Number 5.
Yeah.
The cover. Oh, no. That's I'm going to save that one. Number 5 is going to be, with technology, you have the ability to select a quality editor. And a lot of new authors skip this phase because it's expensive. Don't do it. With technology, you can check the background of the editors. You can find out who the editor is of a book you like and wanted it, and you know your book kind of resembles, and reach out and contact that editor through their social media platforms or through their websites or things like that. Huge, right? Huge. And yes, editing is the most expensive part of the book building process. And people say, oh, I'll put it out and then get it edited later. No, don't. Because there's nothing worse than an unedited manuscript that's trying to masquerade as a book. With spelling and grammar errors, people are going to put the book down. You might have something great to say, but no one's going to take the time to read it. So use that technology to find and interview the right editors. Next is going to be...
Quick question.
Yep.
What about editing software?
You know, when I became an author, there wasn't that stuff around, so I've never used it. Now, I have read about it and researched it. It didn't, to me... It didn't do the job of a great editor. Let me explain what I mean by that. I'm not knocking the software because I haven't used it. But for Devil's Diary, it was a book based in biblical prophecy. And biblical prophecy is certainly complex, and there's a lot of interpretations and translations. So I actually had the book edited by the Harvard Divinity School. And with that, right, they can not only edit it for, right, grammar, spelling, blah, 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 but edit for content and edit for, right, prophecy, interpretations of the prophecy. I mean, it was just a whole different level to editing and nothing that software could have ever done. I mean, they were really deep in some of the prophecy. I mean, went deep as far as, hey, you know, this interpretation, this, and have you thought about this? And hey, this isn't accurate. You want to change this because it's not actually what the Bible says. And or the interpretation is this. And so, I mean, it just made the book spectacular, having their, you know, profound academic insight and biblical insight and those expertise. So I don't know much about the software, but I do know, right, you get the right editor for your genre, especially somebody passionate about it. Your book will be made into a different kind of art, right? Because you, I mean, it can put you on the next level, right? It can, and if you're writing nonfiction, right, it could help grow your business. If you're writing fiction, right, you will, you know, you can propel yourself to, right, the apex of whatever your genre is with the right editor who has the right knowledge. A few more, because I'll you 10. And I forget what number we're on, but I'm going to do from New York. So I'm going to do a few more. So with the technology, I mean, a lot of authors, again, because of, you know, stuff is expensive nowadays. But now with these platforms, you know, one of them is Odesk. And actually, they don't call it Odesk anymore. They call it Upwork. Upwork bought Odesk. But anyway, Upwork is a place where designers and formatters all are listed and can be interviewed with their bios and their past work up there to, you know, where you can find a cover designer, website designer, whatever else. And when I first came in office, these platforms weren't available. Right, you either had to do it yourself or you had to know somebody. I mean, there was no central platform you could go to and say, hey, I need a book cover, and people will, you know, basically apply with their bio and copies of their own work. And that's amazing now. You know, that just wasn't around. It wasn't around 15 years ago. So using technology like that. Then I'm going to talk about some cooler stuff that people may not know, and that's how to use the keywords and how to use.
I struggle with that one.
And it's tough because the way search engines work is they don't just match searches to keywords, but the really good ones, right? They use what's called backlinks. So the more people are, the more links tracing back to your site push your site up in the search engine algorithms. So the more people linking back to your site as a resource actually helps you. Now, how is that relevant? So if you are, I don't know, a teacher and you wrote a book on how to pass standardized, how to get your kids to pass standardized tests or whatever. And if people like it and link back to it, that helps you because now when someone types into a search bar how to pass standardized tests or how to get kids to pass standardized tests, your book will be the first one to come up. Another thing is using keywords in your description. So in my book, I actually had to do a reverse search. So I wanted to figure out, okay, people who purchase books based in biblical prophecy and based in the Creator returning, or people who like stuff like that, what do they search? And then using that, and terms came up like apocalypse. Search came up, you know, four horsemen. Things came up like angels. And so now I have to use those in the book, and I have to use those terms in the book description. That way, when people type in those search engines, it'll automatically map to my book in my description. Now, I know that sounds kind of hokey. You've already written the book, and now you got to go back and plug in these keywords.
It's called keyword stuffing, and you're not allowed to do that.
If you're not allowed to do that, I'm guilty because I do that and it works. So keywords, like putting those in the metadata, right? Keywords are in my website. Keywords are in a lot of the books. Keywords are in everything. I had no idea you weren't allowed to do that. I mean, every author I've talked to, right? I've been to office conferences where they encourage that. So that's interesting. I wonder if I'm going to get the wrong end of the stick,
right? Because I thought you were talking about books. But if you're talking about from a blog post point of view, then yes. But the thing, though, again, and I am no expert, and you're the one, so you're going to school me now if I'm incorrect. Something that I learned, obviously, so like something like a blog post, for instance, you know, anything you're writing out there, you need to have keyword and it needs to have the right density and whatnot. And I think I use Yoast SEO, and it says that the recommended percentage for any keyword you want to use is 2.5%. Something like that, and you shouldn't really use more than that. But then for books, when I'm reading, so for instance on Amazon, I don't use keywords that are sort of just in there. So, and this is stuff that I read in some other authors, you know, how to use keywords to improve the discoverability of your book. So for instance, what I read at one point, and this, you know, like I said, you know, I am no expert, so you can school me if I'm incorrect. And it's this whole reverse searching thing. So when you're putting in the thing, you know, Google, Amazon will tell you not to use keywords that are already in the title of your book, because that's not going to add any relevance. So in this book that I read, the guy says that, you know, for instance, children's book, right? So when you start typing, you then start typing children's book, then you're going to see a drop-down menu of suggestions, right? And the ones at the top, you know, will be the ones that are searched more often than those that are at the bottom. And if the keyword you're trying to search for does not even come up with a drop-down menu, don't even bother using it because it means nobody's searching for it. So they're saying that you need to use keywords that people are actually searching for. And I think that's why the experts and the people who are in the know, when they want to do a Google advert for you, they will go and do a bit of research on keywords to see which are the high competition keywords. But then what the person was also saying in this book, I can't remember the author's name and I can't remember the title of the book because I didn't think we were going to be talking about it today. And even if I had to search for it, I probably couldn't even find it. But anyway, so what he was saying is that when you then, you know, go see the popular words, you then need to click into it and you will then see, okay, this keyword, how many books does it display? If it's one that has a high competition keyword, say more than 100 books, then you need to move forward because it means that the competition is really high and the chances of your book sticking out is like a needle in a haystack. So you need to look for words that are being searched for quite frequently but has less competition. So if the book
definitely agree with. And they, you know, there's a whole bunch of articles and stuff on this about how to pick a kind of a genre that has less competition and that, you know, varying results with that. But you are 100% correct with that. Picking the keywords that put you in a genre where there's not a whole lot of competition, where your book pops up first. I have seen that work. It didn't work for me, because I never tried that particularly, because, you know, I am a spy novel writer, and that's a really big genre, so I tend to be in those bigger genres. That's what I read, that's what I'm passionate about writing. But yeah, I have seen that work multiple times, and it is definitely, definitely good advice for those trying to get more exposure. So I agree with you there. There is one more. And this is a free bonus for all your guests, because with technology comes things like you said this morning that made your day bad, you know, identity theft and all that. So I wanted to give all your all your listeners a free gift today. And okay. If they go to my website, anthonyrhoward.org, that's anthonyrhoward.org, A-N-T-H-O-N-Y, letter R, H-O-W-A-R-D.org, there is a free article on the 7 free ways to protect yourself from identity theft in the information age. And it's really cool. It's a really quick, easy ebook. It's only less than 5 pages and just goes through some really free and easy to implement ways for anybody to protect themselves from identity theft and security and data theft. So I thought that was important to bring up, as you don't want anybody getting access to your novel that you worked hard on, your cover that you worked hard on, or plagiarizing your stuff. So that's stealing your identity and shutting down your YouTube channel or anything like that. That's no good. So this book can help everyone. Again, it's free. Go to my website and you can click on projects or blog, and once you click on it, it'll come right up and you'll be able to download it. So that is, thought that'd be useful.
Well, thank you very much. You preempted me, so now I have no question. Because normally I'll be like, okay, well, I'm going to have to kick you out of my cafe. But then let's look at, okay, are you on Twitter?
I do have a Twitter account, but because my 7-month-old daughter now takes up all of my free time, I haven't tweeted in about 7 months. So I'll give my book, which is, I'm a lot more active on facebook.com/theinvisibleenemy. Easy to find.
Okay.
And now my address is also theinvisibleenemy@gmail.com.
Fabulous. Well, we've got 2 minutes in counting left on the show. Do you have any final words of wisdom, or should I just kick you out now?
Final words of wisdom is there is not only just the new books I have out, but I launched in the last tip was I launched an audiobook, and using technology in the studio, I brought a new product to market that's not a typical audiobook, which one narrator reads the whole book for 10 hours. I have different actors reading the major characters, and then each scene has its own theater score, and then using technology I inserted, thousands and thousands of sound effects. So it's a new way, a new product bringing to market for millennials or folks who just find audiobooks boring, and you can listen to it, while you're driving or exercising, and it's really awesome. So it's The Invisible Enemy Black Fox audiobook. And the free trailer is also...
At the beginning, how did you do it?
So it was really difficult, and instead of paying for studio time, I opened a small studio, Brookline Studios, and there we actually had the actors come into the studio and, do their lines, and then, it took hours and hours and hours to mix, master, and insert the sound effects and the music into, the raw files. And then we changed those raw files right into one master audiobook that did really, really well and kind of changed the game. So I wasn't sure if audiobooks was relevant to the technology discussion, but I see now it is. I should have started off with my audiobook. But either way, they can still download a chapter of my audiobook for free, which is also on my website. And it's awesome.
It's been an absolute pleasure having you on the show. Thank you so much for making the time to come out, and hopefully we'll get to see you again soon.
Yes. You must invite me back when your YouTube channel is up so you can see my one and all that good stuff. So I'm looking, hopefully, if I am worthy, get it back, and your audience shall love me again.
Thank you very much. And thank you, everyone, for listening in. Until next time, it's only your favorite author and host, Shegilola Salami. Bye now.